The following podcast is part of the Never Nervous Network, a podcast network showcasing the best and brightest new shows coming out of Louisville, Kentucky. Catch up on all the local haps with the Never Nervous podcast. Get your horror movie fix with the House by the Video Store. Discuss hot button topics with the Parade of Horribles podcast. Hear an actual conversation on actual conversations, and then get wild with me, Sean Thriller Smith, on the Sean vs. Wild podcast. The Never Nervous Podcast Network is available on iTunes, so like, subscribe, rate, and review. Keep up to date on everything going on in Louisville, Kentucky with the Never Nervous Network. What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Sean vs. Wild podcast. I'm your host, Sean Thriller Smith, and today it's episode lucky number 13. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to hear the exciting conclusion of that two-part sit-down retrospective with Kevin Fletcher. We're going to talk about our time spent together playing music, of course. On this episode, we're going to pick right up with where we left off with Heartbreak Kid. We're going to discuss Creatures. We're going to discuss our time at Uh-Huh Baby Yeah. And also, we're going to touch on how all of that seemed to resolve itself and what we're up to now. So we're going to give some closure to the listeners out there and to ourselves. So even though the episode was extended already into two parts, we could have done, you know, 10 more episodes just to make sure we get all the great stories out there. So definitely I'm going to have Kevin back in the future to explore some of these topics again in greater detail. And as for this week, the web store is up and running. She ain't the prettiest, but she gets the job done. So order your t-shirts, get your koozies in. The weather is warming up, perfect for having some beverages outside. If you're drinking a cold bev and want to keep it sub-zero in the blazing heat, you're going to need a koozie. Or are you trying to stay cool out there? Then ditch your turtleneck sweater for a brand new Sean vs. Wild t-shirt. Maybe cut the sleeves off. Maybe the thought of me having merch inspired you to get merch of your own for your projects. And if so, then you're going to want to go to audiophileinc.com. You're going to want to talk to Shane. You're going to get the best price around for your koozies, your booty shorts, your sweet thongs. I know I've been going to Shane for over a decade for my sweet thongs. The work is quality, turnaround time is super quick, and shipments go to all 50 states. Make sure you check out audiophileinc.com, AudioPhileInc.com. Also, big thanks to Joe Brock at Super Natch. He's been booping these dials and wrestling these gators and french frying these taters, all to make sure I sound professional as H out there. And if you like the show, this is the part of the intro where I ask you please to give a 5-star rating on iTunes. It takes only a few seconds, but the more 5-star ratings, the more visibility the show has, which means more listeners, which means more sponsors, which means the more content I can provide back to you guys. I have some pretty wildly important goals for this show, and I want to be able to bring all of these to you, my wildlings. So please go to iTunes, click the 5 golden meow meow beans, and then press submit. It's that simple, and it means a lot to me. And also, because you mean a lot to me, I'm just going to go ahead and pipe down. I'm going to let you enjoy the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. That's all for me. Let's get wild. Quan Su, dudes. I'm going to hit you with Surf Ninjas right off the bat.
Surf Ninjas. Well, I walked in and you were watching it.
Yeah. I just got a brand new Amazon Fire Stick, and of course I had to look up Surf Ninjas.
What possessed you to be like, the first thing I'm going to look up, or well, was
my
it?
My cousin Ryan was here, and you know my cousin Ryan's taste in movies.
I mean, his favorite movie is Dickie Roberts.
He loves Dickie Roberts, and he loves Surf Ninjas. My cousin Ryan's older than I am. He's in his mid-30s now, but we do still enjoy a great throwback classic. So we were watching Surf Ninjas.
Walking in, I was so surprised at what, because I came in your front door and I just hear, "We're back here." And I walk in, and lo and behold, what you've got on the screen is
just three adults watching Surf Ninjas.
And I just get greeted by Kino from the Ninja Turtles 2 movie.
Quan Su, dudes, ba 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 ram.
Ba, ba, ba.
Can't hit that high harmony. Baba Ram. Dude, and the Game Gear.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I've never played this game before.
Well, and then we looked it up, too, to find out, like, you know, what did the Surf Ninjas game look like? And it looks just like that. It was only on exclusive, like,
I think it is just Game Gear only. A Game Gear exclusive. You can have a poor man's version of Sonic,
probably a poor man's Tetris and then Surf Ninjas on Game Gear.
Yeah. Which looks like a shittier version of Bad Dudes for Nintendo.
It certainly did. Did you ever have a Game Gear?
No, I never had a Game Gear.
I had one. And, well, my sister had one. And I remember it took like 800 AA batteries. And it lasted for like, honestly, I would say without like an actual wall charger, it would last maybe 45 minutes. That's being generous, 45 minutes.
I had the Game Boy. All right. So.
Right. Well, see, Sega does what Nintendo don't. So they gave you like they gave you some full color action here. That Game Boy you can only get in green and light green.
Yeah. Well, I mean, then the Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, but that was way later.
And then, and then that's how Nintendo won the handheld wars, guys.
Yeah.
I played a Nintendo Switch the other day.
Did you?
I played a Nintendo Switch. At the time of this recording, Nintendo Switch has been out for like 48 hours.
Yeah.
It was awesome, and it's very creative. It's much more of a handheld system. I felt like it was much more of a handheld system almost than it was like a console. But it's really like the best of both worlds. It's really like the Wii. It's the perfect hybrid of having a Wii U or a Wii and having like the 3DS.
Yeah, well, like, okay, so I bought both of my kids. They will not listen to this podcast, but Santa bought both of my kids.
Just for safety's sake,
Santa bought two 3DSs for the kids for Christmas, and I mean, they're $300. Like, it's not a joke. Like, it's $300, and then I see the price tag on the Switch, and it's $299.99. I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, that seems economical. Yeah, they can share.
Yeah. So, but I even when I saw the original, the very first ad for the Nintendo Switch, I was like, this is everything the Wii U set out to be, but just it didn't pull it off. I mean, I don't know, technology limits or whatever. Yeah. But now it's like they were able to do what they wanted to do.
I saw the new Zelda and I saw the new Bomberman.
Dude, that Breath of the Wild trailer looks insane.
I saw them both. And playing them handheld is awesome, and then it's also next level. Like, you can, you know, flip the sides of them off and they can be their own independent controllers, or you can take those two pieces and put them into like an actual controller piece, so it's one controller that you can just hold in your hand, and then you just have a screen in front of you playing it, or you can just dock it and then put it on your TV.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
It's next level.
Like, because the Wii, like, I have a Wii U for the kids or whatever, and everybody I've ever, like, that has owned one before me, they're always like, oh, the Wii U is shit. And I'm like, I thoroughly enjoy the Wii U. I do.
Mario Kart's on any system, I'm going to be invested in that system.
Nintendo still does things, and thankfully. Now, granted, I mean, Xbox and, you know, PlayStation and stuff like that. Like, yeah, they've got really great titles. But for some reason, I guess maybe because I have kids,
yeah,
the Nintendo stuff just...
Well, we grew up on Nintendo stuff, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I was more of a Sega... Nowadays, at 32, I'm like, you know, a Sega Genesis was not as cool as the Super Nintendo.
Right.
But as a kid, I thought the Sega Genesis kicked the Super Nintendo's ass.
Well, I got Super Nintendo. I got Sega. I was like a real Sega kid growing up, but I had a regular Nintendo. Okay, so when I had the regular Nintendo, I played it till the end of its lifespan, but we weren't a family that could just get the brand new systems immediately.
You got it a year later.
So I got the Sega Master System, I remember. I got a Sega Master System because it was probably on deep clearance at that point. And I was like, oh my God, this is crazy compared to regular Nintendo, because the music was better and like the sprites were bigger and the colors were insane. And then a couple years later, I got a Sega Genesis, and I'm still comparing Genesis to regular Nintendo, not the Super Nintendo that I know nothing about. So when I got the Genesis, I was like, oh my God.
But dude, so let's talk about like the Turtles in Time, right? So Turtles in Time on Super Nintendo. And then what was the Genesis version of it? It was called
Hyperstone Heist.
Hyperstone Heist. Literally the same game.
Oh, yeah.
Looks so much better on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah. So
much better.
Sega just couldn't handle it. But I just feel like at the time, I was only comparing it to 8-bit Nintendo.
Yeah, yeah, which everything looked better than that.
Oh, there's a 16-bit Nintendo out here.
Right.
I got a Super Nintendo later, and it was worth it. I still love it. Oh, and by the way, guys, you're listening to the Sean vs. Wild podcast, which is a podcast that has a lot of music-related things and entertainment-related things. So just in case you thought you tuned into the wrong episode, Yeah. So, and we're back with part two with Kevin Fletcher, good friend of mine, singer of all my past music experiences, pretty much. And we're sitting down here at the Smithsonian again. And Kevin, so where did we leave off? We're somewhere
in like the towards the end of I want to say it's probably close to the end, like mid 2007.
So we're like in the end of the ashes of Heartbreak Kid. Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like Heartbreak Kid just kind of it became very stressful towards the end.
Yeah, it was it was really difficult getting everybody together.
The post Motley Crue dirt days.
Yeah. So I mean, partying took its toll. We all got tired.
We had other priorities too, growing up.
Yeah, we all had other priorities growing up, and then it was a little bit around. It was like 07. It has to be because I had that apartment.
Studio apartment,
the little studio apartment that was literally a kitchen and a room that was a bedroom / living room
with a bathroom on it.
With a bathroom, and that was my place. And I had that, and then that was when a little bit later on, Lucy was conceived,
born. Yes.
Yeah. So it was around that time. So it had to, because like the Creatures stuff started coming out.
Yeah, and then we decided. I remember we decided to take a break, and even though we didn't take a break for that long, maybe a month or so, but we decided, we were like, you know what, let's not focus on trying to write these screamo,
we stopped trying to be other bands that we looked up to and just decided, you know what, we're just going to write music that we think is fun and that's fun for us. And I remember practicing the first sets of practices with the new stuff, because like Heartbreak Kid, we split and we took a break. We didn't really see each other around very often. You and I always did, but as far as like musicians getting together, it didn't happen. And then Dave, Naked Dave's house,
Naked Dave,
which was also Bray Boy's
living there, living area.
So, Bray Boy was living there. And, so Bray Boy, once again, apartment 40, we talked about him last episode, but he actually ended up becoming a solid member of the band.
Yeah. He was our guitarist.
Yeah.
We had three guitarists towards the end of Heartbreak Kid.
Towards the end of Heartbreak Kid, we ended up adding John, not because we needed a third guitarist, but because we wanted to be
Secret Lives had three guitarists at that time.
So we wanted to be Secret Lives. We added a third guitarist, and then, but not only that, John was just a cool dude to have around.
Yeah. And he always had a place to hang out, always had people over.
So it's like one of those things, you ever see those bands, and you're like, I don't understand why they have this guy in the band. It's not because that person is anything other than just an awesome friend to have around, and you're just like, yo, we got to figure out a place to put him.
And John was actually a pretty cool looking dude. He still had a good look. Yeah. But, so he joined our band, and then,
he was living with Naked Dave.
With Naked Dave. And then we just decided to party.
Yeah. Again,
I think we just all got together, partied, and then was like, hey, well, you know what? Let's,
yeah,
I wasn't even playing my kit. I was playing like a Pearl Export drum kit that John had set up in his
in the garage area / shed area or whatever it was. And I just remember like being like, hey, I've kind of got these new ideas. What do you guys think? And I brought them in, and everybody seemed to enjoy it. And they were like, yeah, let's.
And when we first started, like our first few songs were like almost way more low key.
Yeah, yeah. There was no I guess party to it.
Yeah, Another big thing too is like we kind of got away. Everybody was doing screamo music, and we were like, you know what? Let's. I think that's the time that we decided, you know, we need to be something else. We need to do what we want to do. Like all we listen to, or what we're really influenced in, is like pop music or rock music.
Right.
You know, like a band like Foo Fighters or Jimmy Eat World or something like that.
Jimmy Eat World saves the day. One of my favorite bands, saves the day. Absolutely.
And so that is kind of how Creatures began. By just trying to do something that was different from everybody else in the Louisville scene.
Well, the Louisville scene became real saturated with bands that all kind of sounded alike. Everybody was, of course, their bands were really good, but all the bands sounded the same. There was a very huge similarity.
Once like Devil Wears Prada came about and stuff like that, that became like a big thing.
Yep.
And the only band in Louisville that I think that could pull it off was Jenny.
Yeah, Jenny did.
What a great band.
Like Johnny, the Brothers Brackney.
The Brothers Brackney. Johnny and Luke.
And John Westfall.
John Westfall and Greg.
Yeah, and Greg. Good old Greg Wilkerson.
Greg and I hated each other for like the first, or maybe I just hated Greg for like the first 2 months. But dude, Jenny was like one of my favorite bands that we ever toured with. They were that kind of acquired taste, because it was like these kids were for real, the real deal, Wild.
We took on the persona of Wild.
Yeah, they were but the they real were deal. Like, they were raised wild in the wild. And
some of the shit.
But after, like, the first couple months, like, once we just started realizing, like, hey, you know, with our powers combined, you know, playing these shows and stuff, like, let's actually, you know, try to make something of it. So playing with them, every show we ever played with them or touring with them was, like, one of my favorites of that time.
Yeah, they were, and I mean, they still are. They're all really, really great people.
And we're still hanging out.
Yeah, we still to this day, still keep in touch with every single one of them.
What's great about, we've name dropped about 1,000 people.
Yeah.
And we still pretty much hang out with those same people.
We
They're
do.
All
I keep
around.
In touch with, so far, everyone that we've named.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I've had some interaction with them probably in the last couple months.
Right.
So it's good to know that we all kind of stick together.
We are kind of a family. Well, we are a family, but everybody in the scene is kind of like, we always look out for each other, and we always party together and end up at the same places together. And
even sometimes unintentionally. Yeah. You just, next thing you know, you're like, oh, hey, what's up, dude?
Yeah, exactly. It's like a gang you got to get initiated into. So yeah. Here we are in Creatures.
So yeah, we decided
we didn't want to do any screaming.
No, we there was a no screaming rule. Partly because I sucked at it. It was not very good.
I would say that might have something to do with it.
I remember having a conversation with Wes, and Wes being like, "Yo, man, I love your singing. I like your style, but when you scream, it's awful.
You're gonna blow your voice out, brother."
Yep.
What we need is a sax player.
You guys need a sax player, and you need a keyboard player, and you guys need a violin player. R.I.P. Spike, by the way.
Did you just hit me with some real truth on this
podcast?
Yeah,
you didn't know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, unfortunately,
this podcast is dedicated to Spike.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was December.
My goodness. Wes, if you're out there, call me, brother, or give me your number and I'll call you every day.
Yeah. Wes is dead. Always about the always about the sax player.
So, we decided not to scream anymore, and also to just do something different than any other band was doing at the time, especially like metal, screaming, whatever.
So we went the opposite direction.
We went the opposite direction, and we became Creatures, a band name taken from a reference from Spinal Tap. It's like we were in a skiffle group called Creatures or something like that.
Yeah, but then
we named it after someone's teeth. Someone's teeth. That somebody in our band may
big
have had around
blue braces.
Big blue braces. So
her teeth look like they belong in a band called Creatures.
Creatures. What I loved most about Creatures, though, I think that's when things started taking off. That's when we were playing with Armor for Sleep.
Well, our very first show was with Senses Failing from Autumn to Ashes.
Yeah. So
Terry Harper, great,
shout out
great
to Terry.
Dude. Is probably one of the only people in the Louisville scene, really, and Sean, you could probably attest to this, that like has given local bands and like bands that, you know, if you are halfway decent at your instrument, he will give you a shot to open for a major band that'll come through the area.
Yeah. And it's totally fair too. It's not a pay to play type thing.
You don't pay anything.
You might have to sell tickets, but I mean, you should be selling tickets anyway.
If you're a band unwilling to sell pre-sale tickets, you need to get the fuck out of the game in the first place.
You should probably try to sell a few tickets.
Yeah. So, but no, Terry, I remember he always had our back. And then when we came up with the concept and the idea for Creatures, like I remember sending him some of the songs, some of the demos. And he thoroughly enjoyed it, and he was like, "Hey, I've got this show coming up. Have you guys got anything going on?" I was like, "Actually, we haven't even played our first show yet." And he's like, "Well, you'll play it with Senses Fail and From Autumn to Ashes."
That's absolutely the
it was
best.
Insane, dude.
That's a great way to.
Those videos are still on YouTube, by the way.
I'll have to find them. Maybe I'll post a link.
They are. They are still up there. Good old Critty.
Oh, thanks to Critty.
Yeah, thank you, Critty.
There's some probably embarrassing.
He shot that whole entire set, like it's song by song too.
Nice. Critty's the best. I still hang out with Critty, so shout out to you, Critty. You probably are listening to this, so thank you so much for giving us that. Was kind of like in our Critty hangout days, because we were always hanging out at his house.
Bowling tournaments
with alcohol.
Do you remember we created a fucking MySpace page
MySpace
for the Wii tournaments.
For our Wii bowling league. And we took it seriously. We had a trophy.
We had a trophy.
We had...
it's kind of like the Geller Cup.
Yeah, the Geller Cup. We had our stats posted, results, play-by-play.
And the profile picture was whoever the winner was for that week.
Right, exactly.
I won once.
I won once. Also, I decided I had to take my shirt off for the photo. So there's only, like, especially me at that time, it's like, hey, man, I'm my body is in horrible condition. Probably should take my shirt off for this photo. But, and Critty 2 is, like, the only person we knew that, like, he always gets... And still is the guy that gets all the new technology before anybody else.
He's the only one we knew
that had the Wii.
He had it was like the Wii had just come out, and he was like, and there were no games really. It was just like,
just
hey,
bowl.
There's this sports pack.
Yeah. Dude, check it out. You can bowl there.
You can bowl. You can play golf. You can box. this is what we're gonna do. And yeah, so we'd have Wii bowling tournaments at Critty's house.
Yeah, dude, those were the days. Just reminiscing. And, okay, so, yeah, and creatures, too. Not only did Critty shoot a lot of the footage, but he and I shot the music video for a song that we had in the band called Creatures called Uh-Huh, Baby, Yeah.
Yeah, that music video is still up on YouTube as well. And actually, you know what? I actually looked at it the other day, and it's got like 13,000 views for being what it was.
Good job for us.
Not bad. 2008,
you know, or 2008. Whatever, 9.
Took 13,000 views in like fucking 8 years.
Took a decade, but good job, man. You really did it.
But for being what it was, I mean, we made that video on our own. There was like between you like kind of came up with the concept and the idea, and then Critty and you.
And you
like,
had a house then, a real house at that point.
And we moved furniture out of the house and like move things around so that it would work
and invite our friends over.
Yeah, I had a giant party and we shot a music video for the song, which, funny enough,
yeah. Guys, you might not believe this, but having a band called Creatures, there may have been other bands before and now bands after with the same name. Also, too, Google the word creatures and never see anything.
Yeah, you'll see zoological societies
come up on your Google searches within the first few pages. So having a fun basic name is neat, but sometimes when you gotta in this world of what do you call it, the internet,
one internet.
Sometimes you need to have a more unique name, but. Yeah.
Well, and then that was around the time, too, that I started, like, going to college. I don't know. I was, like, one of those late bloomers. I didn't go to college until way later on. And then I went to school for business and marketing, and I was like, wait a minute here.
These things are – the puzzle pieces are starting to fit
Google,
together.
The Google searches really matter here, and if you look for our band, you're not going to find us.
Right.
But, oddly enough, if you searched for the song name – Uh-Huh, Baby, Yeah. It pulled up
all of our
everything
information.
Everything creatures.
But that was a great stepping stone. That was what, you know, obviously, that's what Uh-Huh, Baby, Yeah would be, that would be the next progression, I guess. But Creatures laid the groundwork for that.
Yeah.
And also, I think it laid the groundwork for our sound, not just with our songwriting, but we decided to go with Chris Owens from a Louisville, like, grindcore band called Lords.
Yeah.
To do our album. So, you know, I'd worked with him previously in Suburban Blood Drive, and Owens is just like loves all things metal. And he did our demos.
And guns. And Mezcal.
And driving around at Hollywood with 4-year-old expired tags.
Dude.
I heard that he recently got updated tags.
Got good tags.
So congratulations to you on that one, Chris Owens. But yeah, Chris Owens did our album, but I think that actually shaped our sound because not only were we, you know, listening to us, we were like kind of like a pop band or pop rock
ish,
band.
Yeah.
But once you got the actual recordings,
yeah,
I feel like it was just all dirt, big, loud.
Well,
it influenced my sound with the drums of being as loud as possible all the time.
And there were some songs from Creatures that actually continued into the later stuff, like the earlier demos
right.
From like the Creatures record and stuff that we did with Owens that we ended up moving on into Uh-Huh, Baby, Yeah recordings later on. But yeah, so all of that, like Owen's being a part of it, because originally we started off, we did the first set of demos with Matt Barber.
That's true. Yeah, Matt Barber did do first set of demos.
Yeah, we did like what, three songs? We did three songs with
and Barber. Actually, those are the demos that I have found.
No,
I didn't. Dude, guys, you're not gonna get the polished great stuff. You're gonna get the early stuff. I want to play stuff that I feel like. Maybe you may have missed out on the first time around.
And if you did hear it, you were very unfortunate.
Dude, I cannot wait for people to be like, I don't know who this Sean and Kevin are, but man, their songs are really not that great.
Pieces of garbage.
Guys, trust me, it gets better.
Yeah, it gets better later on. But yeah, so we did the stuff with Matt Barber from Emmanuel, which who had done stuff with Heartbreak Kid anyway. So he was kind of the go-to. We were still hanging out at the studio.
That was recorded at the Preston studio.
Yep, Preston studio, did the stuff there. And then they went later, like after they had already released Soundtrack, went on to do Black Earth. And then we left from there and then went on to record like the actual 6-song EP that we did that we later dubbed Sex Panther.
Yeah, Creatures had for real release called Sex Panther.
That then turned into an Uh-Huh Baby Yeah release.
Which then turned into an Uh-Huh Baby Yeah release called Sex Panther.
Yep.
And if it's not, for a long time, it was on Spotify.
I think
the
Sex Panther down.
Album. Well, dang. Bummer on that.
I don't think it's there anymore.
But, guys, I'm going to play you some super, I don't know. It's a nice little hidden gem.
Yeah.
The first go-round of Creatures recording a softer, lighter side of Creatures. What song do you want to play? We have a choice of Handsome Devils.
Are these the Barber recordings?
Yes.
Okay.
Kisses. That's the softest song I think we've ever recorded. And then we have,
you know what?
Grenades. That made it. I feel like Handsome Devils and Grenade both made it on Sex Panther, and I think Grenades made it all the way
to right.
Uh-Huh Baby Eye album.
Yeah, yeah. So Handsome, let's do Kisses. Let's do Kisses Mean Stitches.
All right, guys. And how's that for a song title? This is Kisses Mean Stitches by Creatures.
You know his kisses don't mean nothing. Will you do what I won't do? Get you away. You know his kisses all mean one thing. Will you do what I'd rather do? Oh, I can't wait. I thought you would. You
go, guys. Kisses Mean Stitches by Creatures. Seldomly heard demo, I feel like. Unless you have MySpace.
Yeah, that song, man, I totally forgot about it.
That song kind of reminds me of Queens of the Stone Age.
And The Blast.
Yeah, that's true. But you know what's funny is I've never really listened to Queens of the Stone Age. I mean, of course, everybody has heard the singles and that sort of thing.
Right.
It's not a band that, for some reason, it just came out sounding like that. And I was like, how did that happen?
I don't know.
I was really hard in my Coldplay phase about that time, probably.
Yeah, that was, I just remember, like, putting those songs together and thinking, I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Right.
Like, just trying to write something that was completely different than what we were doing.
Yeah, and just more fun, more fun to play, something different. You can only do the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, phases.
There's nothing better, though, whenever you write a song that just comes to you, like, in no time, like, mm-hmm. and you just sit down with your, you know, with all the dudes and... The song gets put together in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is the song, Uh-Huh, Baby, Yeah, was that song.
Yeah.
I remember in your hot, hot stone garage writing that song and writing it in like 30 minutes. And like, we're like, man, this is the jam. And then when we recorded it with Chris Owens, it was like, man, this is going to be the single.
Yeah, it's catchy.
And I didn't think, I didn't think that was going to be
anything.
Yeah. And then we made the video for it. And not only did we make the video for it, later on, when it came time to change the band name.
Yeah. Well, and that was, I just remember we played a show in October of 2009 at Dead Bird Studios.
Oh, I remember that show.
Remember
it was like for Halloween.
Yeah,
I think,
it was for Halloween.
Maybe.
And then that was when we were unsure about what we were doing after that, because Wes was leaving
right
at that point. And he had decided it was time to move on and become an adult and not play on his, you know, guitar with his friends anymore. So and then we were very unsure about what the future of our possible careers or what the band was doing. And I just remember reaching out to Brian Puckett on Reverb Nation, which I don't know that Reverb Nation ever really actually took off to become like anything great, but yeah, I remember reaching out and thinking, there's a local label in Louisville that I've never heard of. It's called Little Heart Records, and they had done some stuff for like what was it, like Nowhere Fast, and
they had California.
California the band.
Yeah.
Not the California.
And they had Danielle Bouchard.
Yeah.
Who's, now she's in Ohoney from
Yeah,
Atlantic.
She's in Ohoney.
Ohoney. I said that weird. Now she's in Ohoney.
She's in Ohoney.
Yep.
Ohana meets
now
family.
She's in Ohana. That's family.
And Brian Puckett was just this little dude who at that point in time, like, we didn't realize who this guy was. We didn't know anything about him. I just remember talking to him and him being interested in that stuff. And I just remember sending out messages to everybody about, trying to fully, you know, just bring everything back. And I was like, you know, I think that we could really do something here. And he felt that the same way. And then we tried to piece everything back together. And that's kind of when the Uh-Huh Baby Yeah lineup, like the original Till Death Do Us Party lineup, kind of fell into place.
Right. Yeah. And I remember whenever we decided that we were gonna sign, and I think when we signed with Little Heart, we still went under the name Creatures, but only for a month or so.
Yeah, it was just for a little bit because
release the Sex Panther EP.
Yeah, he released the Sex Panther EP under, he released it under Uh-Huh Baby Yeah though, because originally we had that EP put together and we'd been selling it at shows on like burnt discs.
Yeah.
And then
just going real DIY with it.
Yeah, real DIY. And I just remember him being like, guys, there is a band. And I want to say they were on Eulogy.
Yeah, Creature.
They were called Creature. Maybe there was an S. I don't remember.
You know, John 5, the guitarist for Marilyn Manson, his band is called John 5,
and the Creatures. Creatures. Yep.
I was like, ha ha.
But he was just like, you can't have this name. And so I remember sitting on it, trying to figure out what we were going to do. And then we just started talking and looking up Google searches. And if you Googled Uh-Huh Baby Yeah, boom.
Yeah.
Everything
that was
else.
It.
So.
Or probably some Outkast lyrics or something.
Yeah, that or exactly. So that was kind of when we took it upon ourselves. Like, yo, it's a really weird name. It's very out there. A lot of people wouldn't, you know, are people going to remember it? Are people going to know it? And how, you know, are people going to forget how to say it?
Yeah, or how are they going to respond to it? Which I feel like over our career, people either absolutely loved it or they just hated it.
Yep.
Kind of embarrassed to say it.
Always ran into that. But Sean, I think the day that it solidified, and I remember you specifically being like, you know, I think we should make a shirt that has like the Frankie Say Relax like logo,
yeah,
like in the same lettering and everything. And then that was the first Uh-Huh Baby Yeah shirt was on
a plain
shirt, plain color, and then white letters.
It was black on white. And then I think we had white on black too.
Yeah. And we did that first. And then we did red with white. And then we did, I remember the one that was like
black and gold.
Yeah, black and gold, which was awesome. But then I remember
purple and glow in the dark.
Yeah.
We had that shirt for a long time.
Yeah, but we had the original Creature shirt was glow in the dark too. It was black, yep, with a green logo and it was done glow in the dark.
I love glow in the dark shirts, and I don't feel like anybody does it. And I'm going to corner that market, guys. Don't do any glow in the dark stuff because that's what I'm doing.
But I remember that once you came up with the concept for that shirt and like you showed us what the design would look like, I was like, dude, this shirt will sell not just based off of the fact that it's a band name, but I mean, even if it wasn't a band, if it said Uh-Huh Baby Yeah, people are going to buy it no matter what.
Right, exactly.
And so that was kind of the birth. That's where that
the birth of our marketing began.
Marketing genius.
Like, oh, hey, well, if we have a name unique enough, we can get unique searches on Google and we can sell merch whether people like the band or not,
yeah,
or know it is a band or not.
Yeah, and sure enough, that shit paid off.
It did. It got us all the way to Warped Tour 2 years in a row. So I feel like we owe a lot to that band name and just that simple idea. But it came from, you know, a Creature single, and we changed our name to that because we wanted something unique.
Yeah.
And then that puts us on Little Heart Records.
Yeah.
And there's I can't say anything more, or I can't say enough, I should say. I can't say enough about the contribution of Brian and how much he meant to not only us, but just everybody in the music scene.
Well, Brian Puckett legitimately, like, he sought out bands in the local scene, and all he wanted to do was help. And I mean, you don't see that. You don't see that with anybody. I mean, never have I ever met someone that legitimately cared about just the artist, that so selflessly would do things and sometimes put himself in a hole.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that his artists were happy. Like, and you don't get that anywhere else.
Or just to make sure that his artist could put out an album, yeah, or had a show to play. Or so
I remember telling him the idea of wanting to record a full-length record with Joe Costable. And he was like, what? And I was like, yeah, man, this guy that I met on the internet.
This guy that I've been meeting on. I've been meeting guys on the internet, and he's one of them.
I remember talking, because at one point in time I was like reaching out to any and everybody. So this is like still full DIY movement, like in my head, reaching out to people, anyone who would listen, anybody who would maybe be a manager or maybe be somebody
work at a record label.
Yeah,
or
work
something.
At a record label. I was just sending emails left and right and demos and this and that, and then sure enough, here comes Joe Costable, who at the time was managing bands. And then he wound up, leaving that industry and just recording. And, he had done stuff with LCD Sound System. He had done stuff with Neon Trees. Yeah. And then little did we know later on, he went on to do Cardiac Heart Attack or whatever the name of that album was, Good Charlotte record. He did some of that with like John Feldman.
It's insane.
Yeah. So he offered to, you know, have us come up to New York and do that record, and Puckett kind of like, you know, are you really sure you want to do a budget this high? And we're just like, yeah, well, why the fuck not?
Yeah, exactly.
So he was like, okay, all right, go for it.
And I mean, that record cost us a few thousand dollars,
yeah,
which is kind of chump change when it comes to recording an album. But when you're an unsigned group of dudes, you know,
money's no object.
Oh yes. Well, but yeah, I mean, having a few thousand dollars just on standby, it can be pretty difficult, you know, especially when you're just taking a chance. And not only that, the budget for the recording was only, you know, $2,000 or $3,000, but living there for
yeah
a month in New York
yeah
was not necessarily inexpensive.
No, I do remember. I remember getting food any way that we could. I remember leaving
eating a trash bag
full of bagels. Yes, that's what I was going to say. I was going, we're leaving Goshen, New York. We were at Mike Legion's studio because we had gone up there to do
drums and bass.
Yep, yeah, the drums and bass were tracked up there in Goshen, and then we're heading back. And there's a gas station / deli bagel shop, and
definitely had like a Boar's Head deli there. Yeah, or something in it.
And I remember getting like turkey sandwiches from there. It was on a hard roll. And they very much were just like, "Hey guys," because they had seen us come through a couple times. And then I want to say it was either you or John that were like, "You got any day old bread?"
that would not have been me. I would not have asked for a handout.
But and sure enough, he goes, "Actually, we're getting ready to toss this in the garbage, but we got a bag full of bagels." So sure enough, we loaded up the truck and
and we went to whatever their local Kroger or whatever was that.
Yes.
Whatever the local, and we'd get turkey.
It's all Sausalito turkey. John had to specifically have
Sausalito turkey on my day old onion roll.
On my day old onion roll.
So, yeah, we spent a month doing what would become our first full length album. Like, we didn't even do an EP just right off the bat.
No, we were just like, yeah, we're going to do 11 songs.
We're going to do 11 songs. And we put out.
Danielle from Oh Honey actually is featured on that.
Yes, we on a song that sounds.
Like Disney.
Walt Disney, if you're listening to this, boy, you gotta hear this one. I'm gonna play that on the show. No, I'm not. I'm not going to.
Don't you dare.
I'm not going to. But that became our first album, Till Death Do Us Party.
Yeah.
And that really is, I think that, I mean, that the reception was awesome for that. Sold a few thousand copies. And we had Sweet Summer.
Yeah.
What a single.
That was a good song. I liked. I remember writing that, actually. We had that little practice space that was across the railroad tracks, like 15th and whatever.
Yeah, on like the west end of
some sort. West end of Louisville, yeah. A little bit. Not the real west. We're not talking like 32nd and Magazine. But it was definitely like, it was like 15th Street or whatever. And I remember that was when we brought Johnny and... There was
Johnny Goble,
yep, Johnny
and
Goble.
John Brayboy played John, guitar.
Yeah.
And John Cox played keyboard with us, like not
we had
on
a keyboard
the album,
for a little
but
bit, yeah.
After the album,
after
was,
the
released.
Album was recorded.
But that album, if you listen to it, has a lot of
keys
more digital, like yeah. More studio mm-hmm. type work. This is the first time we actually recorded with, like in a for real studio with somebody that had recorded with, like, you know,
big name artists,
mainstream artists, yeah. And things like that. You know, before we. People that just specifically recorded bands like us, like rock music or metal music or heavier music.
Yeah.
This is was a totally different animal. So we utilized that. And that album comes off very kind of pop.
It's a pop record, 100%. I don't see, like, there's some elements of some stuff, you know, but when I go back and I listen to it now, it's a very well-polished.
Yeah, it sounds great.
And I remember Jordan even saying, like, if you want the Trash Talk EP to sound anything like that, like, I can't do it.
Right, yeah.
And I was just like, really? I was like, I thought it sounded good.
Right.
But really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember specifically, like, once, like, we were writing Sweet Summer, and I remember doing it in that tiny, tiny little practice space that we shared with some other band.
And I'm in the office there, like in that office space in the 15 and something or other.
Yeah, but so we ended up getting the practice space that was like a storage area, but further down to the right was that other one.
Right, that we wrote Sweet Summer in that one that was like an office type scenario, and then we got to that one that was more like a storage area that was right across from like the biker gang's headquarters.
Yeah,
so we could just play as loud as we want because they were cool with us.
They were, and they're always revving their engines.
Yeah. And it was like one of those things, like, hey, we don't have to worry about any mischief because we have a whole gang of bikers.
It's going
to
be a hot summer.
It's going to be a hot summer. And didn't Amherst practice there?
Yeah, Amherst practiced there, who now has gone on to do Cousins and Season at Sea, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, so they split off, Amherst. Became two different bands.
Shout out to them.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like I said, it's small scene. Small scene, but
small world.
Everybody kind of knows each other.
True.
But then, so yeah, I remember writing those songs, like putting them together, and then going up to Joe's and recording all that stuff in New York. It was, I had a blast. That Nino's Pizza.
Nino's Pizza.
That pizza spot was tight. And then the Nutty, which.
The Nutty Irish.
We then returned years and years and years, years later. And it wasn't like they only open like on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
It wasn't as nutty as I would have liked for it to be.
And then like cousin Joey and like the dudes
for the record
or whatever that Joe Costa actually played bass in at the time. But we like hung out in the basement of the Nutty and watched them play. And I remember like just bringing pitchers of beer down from upstairs, like going down and just watching them play.
Yeah. That was a great time.
That was a great time. And then, so Till Death Us Party then came out.
Then came out, and we played some shows.
And then we didn't.
Yeah, and then we kind of had some more, like, turmoil. Some people...
Turmoil in the toy box.
Some people left. Turmoil. That's a whole other podcast, guys. Some people left, and some people came back. Mm-hmm. And that is when... That is when the era of trash talk.
I think that's when the real magic happened.
That's when it began.
Yeah. So I do remember though, and I want to highlight Sean between you and I, like once we played the Waterfront Wednesday, and that was the last show with the original lineup with Till Death, and then we had a tour booked.
Yeah.
And you and I took the tour on our own.
We did it on our own, playing acoustically
in my Toyota Corolla
in a toy from 1997. There you go.
It was a 97 Toyota Corolla. Paint was peeling off, but it drove like a beast.
The window when it would roll up.
Kevin, you smoking, bro? we'll talk about that one here in a little bit, but I remember you and me loading it up and being like, "We're not canceling this tour."
Yeah.
And so I threw an acoustic guitar in, and
Sean
threw his cajon in there, and we packed a bunch of merch, and it was just the two of us, so we threw our bags in the back seat, and we took off.
I don't know if I could do that again.
I don't know that I could either. But
that was, like, the killer instinct that we had, though. Like, just we have to, no matter what, like, to succeed.
Can't stop. Cannot stop. Yep.
Exactly. But that... And honestly, it all worked out, I feel like, for the best, because from there, we just rebuilt.
Yeah, we did.
We had John.
Brayboy came back.
Brayboy came back there, and we got Blake as our bass player. And
Joe Brock came back.
And then that's when we got into the trash talk era of Uh-Huh Baby Yeah. And that's, to me, that's the best, I feel like that's the best musical endeavor that I feel like I was a part of. Recording is fantastic, but there's an angry energy. There's a raw energy to it. And it's from being, you know, at this
drugged through the mud at that point.
Yeah. 8, 9, 10 years.
Well, I went through a divorce. You know, I mean, every one of us experienced some form of personal turmoil,
putting the band back together, all that sort of thing.
And then once that happened, like, I feel we just made the commitment at that point. Like, you know, Sean and I were already obviously committed, and it was just like, we're going to put this thing back together. And we started writing some of the best songs, I think, that we had ever put together. The Trash Talk EP, to me, is probably the greatest 6 songs that
I agree
we've put together.
The production is fantastic. Your vocals are fantastic. John, for the first time, stepped up as a songwriter.
It was the first record that I did not contribute an entire album worth of music to.
Right.
It was Brayboy brought in 2 of both of the singles.
Yeah.
They were both his ideas.
And I was telling Joe this too when I did a podcast with him. I feel like there's a certain Joe Brock magic
there is
to it.
His lead work was great.
And his riffagus maximus that was put on there. And then my drums were pretty okay.
No, dude, your drum tones are awesome. Like, just everybody was on peak performance, I think. It was peak performance on that record.
And the production just from Jordan Haynes also, I mean, he just knew exactly what we wanted to do.
Yeah. All we did was, like, we sent him a few demos and just said, here are a couple ideas. And I remember, like, we did Dead Friends. We went recorded Dead Friends with him. And it was just one song. And it was, we went in, and I just remember him being like, so is this like an audition? For?" And we were like, yeah, actually, we're piecing together a record, and if this goes well and it sounds awesome, then we'd like to come and do the rest of it with you. So he did, he worked his magic, and I remember the last time talking to him that he was like, still to this day, he puts it on his resume as yeah. like...
He mentioned that on the podcast. He's like, this is one of the things I'm most proud of, which I think is awesome.
It is. It's cool. It's really cool that, you know, he looks up to it about, I would like to think of it the same we do.
Right.
That song is, at one point in time, I remember Uh-huh Baby Yeah being the staple. And then we somehow pulled it out of our shit shaft.
Right out of our shit shaft.
put out Dead Friends, and it was just like that song. And then we shot the video, and it was received so well. And I feel like... we kind of broke into the audience that we lost at,
right.
in Louisville when we switched from Creatures.
And we broke into a national audience at that point,
we did.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely, because then Streaker Records came along, which Rob DiPiazza, you're a great dude.
Awesome dude.
But Streaker Records...
And that put us on Warped Tour.
Put us on Warped Tour, and so we worked our asses off on Warped 2013. And over the course of the time from that record, what did we sell? It was like 20,000 copies of
we
a record.
We sold a lot, just honestly.
15,000 yeah.
easily. 15, at least 15,000 copies of our album.
With the help of Brian Puckett and then
Rob.
And Rob and the dudes at Streaker. And then between us, like hustling every single day. Like we would throw CDs into backpacks and like we were working with the catering company. And so they would... some of us would be working, and the ones that weren't working would be out hustling. So like meeting kids, and we'd be out, we'd have shit hooked into our iPhones, and just
or your androids
for Sean, but we would just let kids listen. And the thing was, we pulled out this really awesome like idea, and it was. We're just going to run around and we're just going to throw headphones on people's heads from behind. I just remember Rob, it wasn't really our idea. It was Rob's idea. It was like, you ever thought of surprising people? And we're just like, no,
nope. By any means necessary.
Yeah. And he was like,
music out there.
Yeah. He was like, no, seriously, run up behind people and throw your headphones on their head.
Yeah.
And we were like, does this work? And, sure enough it did. I mean, over the course of two Warped Tours, so 2013, 2014, I mean, it was anywhere between 15,000 copies. I remember just burning through boxes.
Yeah, just boxes and boxes. You sell hundreds a day.
Yeah.
Per day. And then that's a 40-plus day tour, making thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on a $5.
Yeah. Album. And we only played three Warped Tour dates a year.
In 2013, yeah. Yes.
But it did get us the invitation back.
Into 2014.
Yeah.
Which we played more. And we met awesome bands, including Let Live. I mean, we met so many awesome bands. I want to get the dudes in Let Live on the show. But the reason why I specifically point out Let Live is because through meeting them, mm-hmm. through meeting Jeff especially, Jeff loved what we were doing, loved our work ethic, loved what we were doing and our music. And Jason, too. Jason's like, man, I listened to the album. I was like, what?
I just remember him
to give
going,
this to you and never talk to you again.
I just remember him coming up to me and being like, you heard of Secret Lives, ain't you?
Yeah, exactly.
He was like, that was my shit.
Yeah. So, but that led us to the third album, to Illuminasty, because Jeffy.
The good old LOL with Jeffy.
LOL with Jeffy. Jeffy did the third UHBY
and
release.
Final.
Third and final UHBY release.
Yeah.
And going to California.
Yeah. Dude, how many times
I would
we
love
take
to just
that
I'm just gonna
trek?
Move there. I'm just gonna move there, man.
I mean, in that year, what was it? Yeah, in 2014,
we trekked to California
to and from
a lot.
And then back out west for Warped. Like, I mean, we headed back out the way and then turned around within a year's time in March, we were back out with Assuming We Survive. So
and
within a year, we trekked out like back and forth like six times.
And that's not an easy drive when you're located in, you know, middle America. It's a 30-hour drive to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
With
going to San Diego, more like 32, 34.
Exactly. So, and that's without stopping. That's without.
Yeah.
And
no
when
pee
you have
breaks.
All these dudes in a band, you're going to have pee breaks. You're going to have food breaks.
Hence the reason I perfected pissing in a bottle.
Yes. I haven't quite. I never mastered
it. I locked that shit down.
I'm going to pee into this can. I'm going to pee into this, I don't know,
I had
shot glass.
Impeccable aim.
Impeccable.
I definitely perfected the aim. That's all I know. And I mean, what? So 6 times in a year, back and forth, 2 Warped Tours. I mean, if you count the times that, like, in 2013, so in 2 years' time, I don't know, 12?
Yeah, twice that.
Yeah.
And and then we spent a couple weeks out there doing the Illuminasty EP. Yeah.
Which, it was so cool how that kind of all came together, because I remember Jeff giving me his number randomly.
Yeah.
And just being like, hey, I would love to record you guys and just make sure that, you know, you guys, when you come out, like, I'll take care of you, like, this and that. And we were just like, okay, cool. And I just kind of blew it. Like, I took his number, didn't think anything else about it. And then we were out with Audio Strobe Light. I remember we were in...
I do remember that. We were in, like...
Springfield,
we just had, like, the shittiest show ever.
Springfield, Missouri. Yep.
We were, and we got the good news.
DJ Zaruba.
Blay Man.
Yeah, the Blay Man. We're like, who the hell is the Blay Man? We went to college. We went to school. But I just remember him being like, so, yeah, man, sorry I haven't hit you back yet, but I really want to bring you guys out here. Let's record. And so we set it up. And so we went out, we did, you know, 2 weeks with Jeff, and that became Illuminasty.
And I am really proud of that album, too. I think it sounds awesome. I mean, it went through, for real, like, you hear about, like, screenwriters or things, like, putting their craft into development hell.
Yeah.
That went in through development hell.
That record,
but you know,
was
what?
In
it,
development hell.
It came out, and that's all I care about. Like, yeah. It actually was released. I've got a physical form of it.
We recorded it 2 years before it was released.
Before it ever was released. But yeah, and I mean, I'm just glad that finally we could see that to fruition, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, shit happens, things work out, things don't work out, but you know, at the end of the day, here we are 2 hours into just shooting the shit. Two people that have all this backstory and history, and we didn't even touch on,
no, there's,
we didn't
so
cover
much.
Like, hardly any of it.
We got to do a whole other podcast about the things that we didn't cover.
Right, exactly. I'll definitely have to have you back on again. But yeah, so we had a nice little trek down memory lane. I mean, that got us all the way to the end. But let me ask you this. I know a lot of people, I want to be kind of the first person to, I guess, officially report it, but we are not, uh-huh, baby, yeah, for those of you that, I mean, aren't in the know, don't know, we played our final show in November,
yeah,
of 2016.
November 19th.
November 19th.
Yep.
And I guess tell the listeners, set the scene for the listeners, I guess what your take is on why it happened or the events that happened that day and all that sort of thing.
Well, and... You know, I don't look back at that day or making that decision as being a bad thing. It kind of, I think it set, there. It was already set in motion a long time before that. And like when Puckett passed, unfortunately, it just kind of solidified the fact that maybe there was a point that, you know, maybe we should just take advantage of what we'd all learned.
And yeah, let this go.
Yeah, let this go. Because this was something we'd kept alive for 13 years, you know. Granted, different names, different ideas, different songs, different members. But essentially, you and I mean, this was the same thing over and over and over again, just trying to revamp it, trying to make it happen. And then we had to, we owed it to ourselves to either call it and move on or just continue trying to beat a dead horse.
Right.
All great times. And that night, playing together for the last time, which, I mean, who knows, maybe you and I will play together again. But that show with the, you know, the four of us on stage, no
Skyscraper
one else.
Skyscraper.
Yeah,
with
well, yeah, that's right. I said no one else. Skyscraper.
Not a single person.
Not a single person. No, Skyscraper actually played, and then we did a really cool mashup between Aha and Skyscraper and did Walk This Way, which was really cool. The whole Run DMC Aerosmith thing, it was awesome. But I mean, it was all in tribute to Brian Puckett, and it just seemed like a really great way to close it out.
I agree.
We had talked about it being the end, and then when we found out that we could play the Little Heart Anniversary, I was like, there's no better time. There's no
than
better
now.
Time. Yeah.
I agree. And I don't look back on it with anger or disappointment because I feel like you and I have been in it since day one.
Yeah.
So we have a long history behind us. We had a lot of rewards for just two kids from Nowheresville,
Nowhere, Indiana. That just decided one day we're going to play music together. You want to write some songs?
Exactly. From that first day, February 1st, 2004, in my garage,
yep,
to, you know, playing Warped Tour in 2013, playing Warped Tour in 2014, being in LA to record, being in New York to record, you know, seeing parts of the country that I never would have an opportunity to see.
I mean, there's so
many meeting people that I would never have an opportunity to meet.
There are so many musicians, so many people who set out to, you know, I want to be a career musician, but they never get to experience those things. So at the end of the day, like if I had to be, you know, if I was on my deathbed and I got hit with, you know, did you accomplish everything you set out to accomplish? No, I didn't, you know. But did I accomplish some really, really great things? Did I go a lot further than I ever really thought that I would? Absolutely.
Did you accomplish more, than even what you planned originally?
Yeah.
You know?
We were just a bunch of dudes from nowhere that wanted to play music, and here's where we ended up, you know? Did we make it? Did we become the next Creed? No, we did not. But did we, you know, did we do things that a lot of musicians aspire to do? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know,
and who knows where, you know, the future lies. I know that your story is not over. I know my story is not over. Blake's, John's, like everybody's got something going on now, and you've got your group, and I've got this podcast, and we were just talking the other day. It was like, you know, even though we're not playing together, we have now like a new found energy or an excitement about the projects that we're doing now.
Yeah. No, it's great. I haven't listened to every episode of your podcast,
sure,
unfortunately. but I have listened to three of them.
Nice. That's a start.
I know you've released what, 9, right?
Yes. Well, as of this recording, 9, and then when this airs, it'll be you'll be 11, I think.
11? Okay. Well,
and 12. This
see,
will be
I keep
12.
Up. I keep up, motherfucker.
There you go.
But, I'm really excited to be a part of it. I'm glad. I've listened to a few of them, and just really glad that you invited me on. It's cool. Hey. And then with my stuff, like hearing, I don't even have vocals laid down on any of the tracks yet, but, you know, like you said, we've talked, and just I've revitalized, like, it's been rekindled, I guess,
right,
the excitement of doing something new.
Of working and creating something and making something.
You're excited about it, which is, you know, I can remember that feeling from being, you know, when we were young. So it's great, and I'm proud of you.
I'm proud of you.
I'm really glad that you're doing something that you love and stand behind it.
Well, thank you, sir. And I'm going to have you back on, not only to just drink more beers and chat and talk about all the fun stories, because like we were saying earlier, we didn't really touch on half or
this
fraction.
Is the abridged version.
This is the most abridged version. So we'll get into more depth later. Now that you have all the background details and the timeline, we'll fill in those gaps later. But we'll have you on too, and when Summer Youth has your music stuff posted, and
cool,
we'll do something else. So
absolutely.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in again to part two with my conversation with Kevin Fletcher. I'm Sean. This is my podcast. Check it out on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Google Play, wherever you like to get podcasts. It's there. Hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, Tinder, Grindr, Livewire.
Chantrellines.
The Chantrellines. Hit me up on MySpace, Friendster, Makeout Club. we're old enough to know what those are. Hit me up on LiveJournal and Zanga.
Zanga. Yeah, I was going to say Zanga.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for coming in today. And listeners, I'm going to leave you with, I guess, our trademark song.
Yeah.
This is Dead Friends by Uh-Huh Baby Yeah. Before I do that, love you, buddy. Thanks
love
again
you too,
for coming
dude.
Over.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope you guys enjoy it. Like you, it's all downhill from here.
You're lying.